Hey guys, how you doing? Before the show, I wanted to let you know that I will be in New York next week. Yes, there might be a meetup, and you can keep your eyes on the Please Advise Twitter for more info on that. But more importantly, I'm going to be recording several shows with exciting New York-based guests that normally I wouldn't have the chance to talk to. So since I'm trying to knock out maybe 4 episodes in a day, we really need an abundance of calls. We need to be call rich. So if you've ever wondered if you should call the show, the answer is yes, and you should do it right now. Reminder, your questions can be about literally anything: dating, television, food, friendship, online etiquette, whether or not someone was acting like an asshole, or if it's just you. Don't hesitate to call. We want your questions about everything because I'm qualified to give advice about literally nothing. 323-450-7408 is the number you need to call. Again, that's 323-450-7408, or email us at askpleaseadvise@gmail.com with letters or voice notes. Those voice notes sound real, real good. Never forget that, guys. Stop sending me your questions via Snapchat. I'm not looking. Don't ask if you should ask your question, because you should. Feel free to stay anonymous. Details like age, location, and sexual preference may help give some context, but that's not really required either. Do whatever you want as long as you're calling us and leaving a message at 323-450-7408. All right, here's the show. Hey, you guys, it's episode 143 of Please Advise. Christina actually picked our guest out today. Christina, do you want to talk about how you met our guest?
Yeah. So a couple months ago, I was on a panel that talked about like how to start a podcast. And it was a little awkward. But afterwards, a couple people came up to talk to me. And one of them is our guest today, Marquita Lestar. Hey, girl. How are you?
Oh, my God. Okay. So I was so nervous that I was going to say Lestar wrong or Marquita. Like, that's just so me. And so the fact that I inadvertently just got Christina to introduce you, I should acknowledge to the audience, was not intentional. Like, beforehand, I was like, I still can't say Andre Vermeulen's last name. Like, I still, like, struggle with that every single time I try to say it. So I was like, wow, that was kind of like sneaky of me, but I didn't even know I was doing it. Hi.
I was like,
hi.
I'm gonna take the pressure off. Like,
thanks for coming all the way up from Long Beach.
No problem. I enjoyed the ride until I get on the 5. Like, the 5 is death. It's right after the 4 or 5, there's the 5. So yeah.
My best friend worked at his family acquired they bought a factory, but then they wound up acquiring the business that came inside of it. So It was this like fish plant, and like it was there was literal gang activity going on like within the employees, like, because it had been this like business that had been passed down with the factory. And so like there was probably some mob ties or something, but like they were in deep, and it was right across the street from Cisco Burger. And so Jesse James, the one that was, so we were like, Ed was like in love with Jesse James, my best friend Ed.
Right.
He would see him all the time because he's like a Long Beach staple. He's like a fixture to some people in Long Beach. He's a fixture.
Right.
And he would see Sandra Bullock sometimes. And like then the whole thing happened, and Ed would still like have to see him, and he'd be like, when I see him, I'm just so disappointed. Like, he's like, he felt personally disappointed.
I was like, I don't know you, and you don't know me, but just know my disappointment is great.
Yeah, I remember he introduced him to too. And Ed used to linger with celebrities a little too long. Like, I'd be like, we said hi, now let's keep it. Let's pack it up and keep it moving. You know what I mean?
Yeah, keep it short and sweet.
You gotta
leave them wanting more. That's what you do. You like, you stunt on them. And yeah. Then you just take off like, oh, I have something to do, even if you don't have anything to do.
Yeah. Or like, you're the mysterious person that came in and told an amazing anecdote. Like he can come in and tell a great story, but I'm like, if we have nothing to say, we got to keep it moving. Otherwise, we're just standing there person who did not choose to speak to us. We're just standing there expecting them to keep conversation going with us, which when you think about it, in reality is so weird.
It like, is weird. I'm so... for one, I'm super talkative, but I'm terrible at small talk. Like,
yeah.
Either we're talking about something, we're having this great conversation or connection, or we're not. And I'm cool with either. Let's keep it honest, keep it real, and keep it moving if it's not happening. You
know? Surprising to me, because it was like our conversation felt so natural when I first met you.
Well, but we weren't small talking. That's small right. talking is like, so different. We like huge, exactly. Yeah. We got into ideas. Like anytime I think we bumped into each other again at a
mixer for like public radio.
Right. And like again, just like went off, and she's like, okay, we need to mingle though. We already know each other. Let's keep mixing. Yeah. Let's keep mixing. But that's how I roll. But I can't do the hey the weather and I know you from that thing.
Like, it's like a nightmare. Yeah, and like Betsy, do you consider yourself an introvert or extrovert? Because I think that that's something a lot of introverts get pegged with is like we don't like to talk to people if there's no need to do it, like because it's just exerted energy. Right. But like the people are always like, but we had such a great conversation. It's like, yeah, because you're not a psycho. Like, but or like I didn't feel bad vibes from you. But like for me, I can turn it on when I can tell like if the person's normal and I want to talk to them.
Right.
You know what I mean? But like if not, I'm just like, I can't.
I think I'm an extrovert. I definitely get a high from being around people. Most definitely. Like, no, but I can do a long time and I'm not clingy. I think some extroverts, because they get such a high from being around other people, that they get like very dependent on it.
And yeah.
Like, I can have healthy relations with people and I don't need to be around you all the time.
Yeah.
I can make more than one friend.
And you're okay with being alone, which is important.
Well, I do, because I was like, I'll never get anything done. Like how I do a lot of different stuff. And so I'm like, I would never get anything done if I had to constantly be around people, because there are very few people in my circle that you can invite over and be like, hey, we're going to just like do
gonna
stuff.
Chill.
And then it's like pretty much there's somebody in the room. I'm cool with that too. I like the idea of maybe having somebody in the room
parallel
to bounce.
Play.
Yeah, to bounce ideas off of them or something occasionally, but we're going to actually get stuff done. I need to actually
Chris, that's how Christina
stuff.
And I used to hang back in the day. We'd sit at Coffee Bean for like 6 hours and like just like, yeah, we talk like a little bit here and there, but that's really like how we became close, which is weird for how little we spoke. Right. You know what I mean?
That makes sense to me. My closest friends are like that.
But I do say like, this is the thing that I've noticed with friends more and more, and that like I feel like as a compliment when people have said it to me, which is like, I feel like we would have been friends in high school. Like, right. And that's like, I, you know, like when you meet someone, you're like, we would have been friends at any point in our lives. Like, I would have been friends with you in middle school. I would have been friends with you in high school, college. I think I'll be friends with you when I'm 50.
That's like, a huge compliment.
Our next guest, Ronnie, is someone like that, where it's just like, duh, like we were always meant to be friends. Like, it just is now we get to hang out and meet each other. And like, sometimes I'd be like, I wish I've known you for longer. Like, and I'm
right?
Like,
I've definitely
we can't
met
go
people
back
like
and
that.
Fix
like,
that.
Like, oh my goodness. Like, we can't go back in time, but let's make sure to enjoy each other now. And so, like, when I meet those kind of people and we start to get busy, if they like pop on my mind, I like totally just text or call or even leave a message and be like, hey, you, I need to see your face.
I like to send mail.
I'll send
like a card.
Cool. I was like, I want to get back into that too. I'm like, I started collecting postcards. Mm-hmm. Like, if you go in Long Beach, we have our own like Silver Lake esque neighborhood called Retro Row in Long Beach. I mean, I feel like that's what they're gunning for.
No, it's they have a huge artist community.
Yeah,
in Long
they do.
Beach.
They do. And you know, you got like your comedy and your improv and your bands inside the bar or the coffee shop. Kind of set up and stuff like that. But they also sell like vintage postcards for Long Beach.
Yeah.
I like collecting those and sending them to people. And I'm trying to do that more often. I'm also trying to start a tradition for me to, instead of Christmas cards, I want to do like Halloween cards.
Oh, that's really fun.
Yeah. So I was like, every year.
I noticed that your slip-ons are kind of Halloween.
Yes. I stay there.
Here's the thing is that you're, and I mean this in the best way possible, but you're very costumey. Like, you are like, everything that you are wearing is bold. First of all, her hair is amazing. It's blue. Like, how do you, I mean.
I like, this is like a sky blue. It's like almost, it's like.
I love it.
It's like, it's a weird color, and I've been hunting for it for a while.
It's perfect.
Christina knows I've been through quite a few shades of blue in the past year. And like, I landed on this one. I was like, yes, I even had like this teal where I was like a mermaid for a while.
Yeah.
Definitely like, I was like, I'm a mermaid, but I might be more like an Ursula.
This is like Avatar. This feels very Avatar
yes,
to me.
Yes, very Avatar in color. Yes.
Yeah, it looks yes, futuristic.
Thank you. I was like, I am of the future.
And a and you're wearing a panda shirt and a jacket that I'm too blind to make out the pattern on, but it's dope as well.
Yeah, it's like really random pattern. Like, yeah, I wear a lot of random patterns together.
I love that
together.
You are dressed like a, you are just a little bit like a cartoon character. It's
oh,
like
that's
perfect.
Awesome. That's like, goals no, right there. Great. That's yeah. great. There's this cartoon I like to watch that I totally like. I feel like they like ripped off of me. Like they don't know me. But,
yeah.
But
I felt that way
it's
too.
It's like Star vs. Evil, like the Force
oh,
of
I
Evil.
Haven't seen that one.
It's on Cartoon Network. And I was like, that's me. Like mm-hmm. me, probably more like early college, late high school, you know, because like, you know, responsibility kicks in adulting yeah. sucks.
Yeah.
More or less. But yeah, but I love that cartoon. I'm like, that's so me.
I wonder if that's like a narcissist quality or if you have something special because I have watched things in the past before and been like, I don't know if they know me. But they that's my personality. They stole my they
done
stole
that
me.
With other stuff. Okay. Perfect examples of that is like my bestie, Kayla. We actually call her Kayla the Bunny.
Uh-huh.
And are you familiar with Happy Bunny?
Yeah.
That is her.
That is
and
so
we
funny.
Called her Bunny like way before that dropped. And yeah. I was like, somebody has
yeah.
been stalking
somebody.
You.
Yeah.
Somebody. Whoever wrote that mm-hmm. is like, they're secretly stalking my friend. And we're really concerned because I mean, it's just like that whole like evil but cute thing.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, she would totally say something like that. And then like the whole bunny thing. And I was like, oh, yeah.
That's like the bunny that for people at home who are like, because I'm sure there's people who are like in their 40s right now listening to this being like, how the fuck am I supposed to know? You do know what she's talking about. It's that bunny, mm-hmm. that happy looking bunny. Mm-hmm. And then this went back to the 90s.
Right.
They had this.
And it was
and like the caption
off.
Would be like, I want to shoot your eyes out. Like,
yeah, something
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
You do.
Google
when you
friend.
See it. You will know exactly what it is. Like, it's been around since, because I remember they'd have it at, like, Newbury. I'm
they
from Boston.
They had bags. They had buttons.
This is the first time I've ever seen it.
I guess it's really popular here. I don't know if the guy, I think it's a guy
That's
who
it,
created
I've seen.
It.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he's West Coast, but I know here in the West Coast, it was, like, in every store. Of course, Hot Topic first, and then it spread.
Yeah.
You know, I know I bought her several things because I was like, well, you should own this stuff because
it's you
and stuff like that. But yeah, it was pretty hot here. So
are you from this area?
Yeah,
from LA?
I'm native rare. I've been told every
time I told you that.
Yeah. Every time I meet somebody, they're like, oh, you're from here. I'm like, yeah. Born and raised.
It's just so funny because a lot of my good friends, like Blair and Ed, are from here. Like, I either am friends with people from here or from one of six states. Mm-hmm. Like, Ohio, I fuck with, Michigan, New York. Like, there's certain states where I, like, fuck with multiple people from those states. But for the most part, not. Okay, so I just moved the mic by accident. We just took a break. You guys probably didn't realize that. We took a break because I moved the mic and broke it a little bit. But while we stopped, we were talking about Anna Nicole Smith because I was looking at my Anna Nicole bobblehead that was gifted to us by one of our guests. And I just was saying that, like, you were saying you loved Anna Nicole because she lived so much life.
Yeah, exactly. She seemed fun. And I felt like she had, like, her own kind of personality and cheekiness that, you know, most models, like, by yeah. default don't have. Like, they're trying to be, like, dolls in a way.
Yeah.
And they're trying to fit into a very restricted, like, box of, like, what is beauty, what's going to sell, what's going to get me these contracts. And
yeah,
I mean, even when she got a little thicker, I love that she was like thicker, but she was still really hot. I mean,
even at her peak of modeling, she was on the thicker side. Yeah.
Side. And I was like, I particularly like thick women, so it worked for me before I realized that's what was working for me. But yeah, so I felt that when she did pass, it was really unfortunate because she was definitely different from models then and now. We're only now kind of returning to this, like, you know, plumper plus size models.
Yeah.
But I was also saying, though, what was unfortunate about her death is, like, she missed the opportunity, I think, to become more of her own brand. Like, it was so there. She mm-hmm. should have been her own brand, where she's more independent of the men in her life. So you're not taking a whole bunch of drugs just because, you know, the dude who's kind of like helping you pay your bills is kind of wanting you to take them. Like, what for? Like, why do I need this? I have questions. I'm in a place where I can ask those questions and stuff like that. So I think it's something, if there is a lesson to be learned in that, and it's not done in any type of judgment. It's just, I feel like I can learn from my own mistakes and the mistakes of others.
Yeah.
Like, why bother going through that if somebody already tried that and you're like, oh, that didn't quite work for them.
And like, and what I was like coming to the conclusion of is with like, because you were saying like she lived, and I was like, she did until she wasn't anymore. Mm-hmm. And it was because she kindly handed over her life to the trust of this man.
Right.
And
her agency and independence and stuff all became dependent on this one man. And I'm like, there was really no need for that.
And we were all saying that, like, basically, like, Anna Nicole is a great reminder to not trust men. And like, that is, and that's something that's like one of those things that I know that there's guys listening to this, also a lot of straight guys that listen to this, and like, they get offended when I say stuff like that. And it's like, I hope that you realize, and I'm just going to cut you off at the pass from writing on that email. I hope you realize that this is not a feeling I would like to feel, like, and that I understand that there are trustworthy men out there, but a lot of them have proven themselves to be untrustworthy. You could say the same about women. Mm-hmm. I just would say significantly less so. There's like, if you ask your guy friends versus your girlfriends, like, I think that you'd find most of the things that have happened with girlfriends have come from either aggravated circumstances where it's like, okay, but like, you look back and that's kind of his fault. Like, he never listened to her. Like, he never heard her. He never even got to know the real her.
There's like a sense of obliviousness.
Right. There is obliviousness. And also, like, I think, I forget what comedian was making this joke, but it's a great point of when you talk about crazy girlfriends and crazy boyfriends. Like, you don't hear as nearly as many stories as people dying from crazy girlfriends as you do from crazy boyfriends.
Oh, no.
Like, me and my dad and like my bestie, we're like obsessed sometimes with ID. Like, sometimes we can't always have it on because we'll sit and watch it like for half a day.
So good.
And stuff. And often, you know, your stalker cases, like, sure, girl will stalk you, but it's far less likely she's going to turn violent. Not to say there isn't a prison with women who have done just that, because they're snapped, which focuses on women who do it.
But
it's always at the end spectrum. I just think that guys have this like entitlement. And again, it's like, not all dudes. If it doesn't apply, don't get your boxers in a knot about it. You know, if you see a guy friend who's saying some troubling things, say something to him, because I feel like guys will listen to guys more than they'll listen to girls. They're quick to dismiss us.
Well, I, like, to that point, I always get in trouble because I say that, like, Jodi Arias is, like, not as guilty as I think. Like, she definitely killed that man. That man fucked with her when he, well past the point, he knew she was mentally ill. Mm-hmm. Like, that is not okay. Like, if you're screwing around with a mentally ill person, I don't know how that's much different than, like, taking advantage of, like, a mentally handicapped person. Like, you know they're crazy. You know that you can get a reaction out of them if you push these buttons. You know that if you, like, push the, you know, the green button, she's always going to come back. Like, she's always going to come back and have sex with you and be your girlfriend or do whatever else. Mm-hmm. But then, like, you can treat her like shit because she doesn't meet your moral standards. So when I look at someone like Jodi Arias, as much as I think that she does have a lot of elements of being an actual sociopath, I think that she is someone that I always look at and I'm like, just look at her. Like, that is an example of what happens when you get fucking pushed to the edge. Or even, this is another extreme example, like, did you hear Leslie Van Houtner or whatever, the woman who was involved in the Manson killings? She got approved for parole.
Yeah.
And
never signs off on it,
though. Yeah. And it's down to whether or not this governor is going to sign off on it. Mm-hmm. And I honestly, like, if they show remorse, if because there still are some Manson girls in there who mm-hmm. are like are down for him, and like they will say like I did exactly what I wanted to do, like mm-hmm. they've been severely brainwashed. But if you take a couple girls that are in like 16 years old on a bunch of LSD, it's the 60s, it's the free love movement, mm-hmm. and they meet this charming older man. And he, like, there's a reason why he had beta males mm-hmm. and women, young women, that he had go do his killings, you know?
Remorse?
Oh, yeah. She's one of the ones that's like, I realize what I've done. She's found Christ. Like, a lot of these people, like, kind of snapped out of it the second that
it got real.
They were really in prison.
Right, right.
Because then they were like, okay, so I'm in for the rest of my life. I might as well start reading the Bible. I might as well start taking these counseling opportunities. They were flipping about it all throughout the trial. But I think that's because he's still... was working as a puppet master a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I just think that, like, I understand that she was a part of a brutal murder. I also understand that there was a lot of elements going on there, and that was a murder that was the guy who instructed them to go murder will never get out of prison mm-hmm. because he is, I think, the most guilty, you know?
I mean, they have taken life, I think.
Yeah.
Like, life is more than just, like, you being alive. They have taken that woman's life.
Yeah, they took lives. Yeah.
Well, I'm saying about prisoners. Like, sometimes you get sentenced to life. And I hate to sound like the Shawshank Redemption. But yeah, sometimes that's like, you might not stay in there your entire life, but life is exactly what they have taken. She's an elderly woman now. And I'm not saying she's not capable of shit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if she decided to flip out, but I'm like, At this point, if she's remained remorseful and you've had multiple times where the parole board is like, hey, this person looks like she can re-enter. That's the thing about prison.
She checks out, yeah.
It's like it should be your focus should be to redeem these people so they can go back to society instead of us having like the most people in prison.
You're right.
For any developed country, you know, that isn't like a dictatorship. Like, that's a bad look to imprison so many of your citizens. So I was like, is there a chance? But I also see it from, I'm always that person who can see it from both sides. Like, you don't want to be the person who signed off on that chick getting out.
Right.
And she do something and you're like, ah.
They wouldn't you know? Let that one out on her deathbed. Yeah. And I'm like, why are we paying for someone to
now,
die?
She's like, if they're like I've heard very rare cases of that, but if they're like sick.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, come on.
Like, what are they going to do? Is she going to get out of her deathbed?
Yeah, they're
and,
on
like,
chemo
go...
or something. Like, yeah, nah. He or she can go home. Like,
but why don't they just bump? My question is, I know the reason why Charles Manson hasn't been executed is because... he hasn't made it up. They haven't gotten far enough on the list to execute him. I guess, right?
That can't be it because they've executed people
is it he's
who
still
got
on appeals. What is he doing?
I don't know because he got
a death sentence. Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't know why because I know they have executed people who were put in jail way after him, like 20 years after them and stuff like that. They had quite a few people. I know the biggest one I know for like, cause it's like hood related. It was like Tookie. Yeah. And they executed him and he got in jail like 20 years after the fact.
Do you want to explain who that is?
Yeah. I don't know who that is.
I believe.
Is that your Whitey Bulger?
Like, no, he was, I don't know his legal name, but he was a hit of, one of the big, I don't want to get messed up. I think it was the Crips. Yeah. Look it up because I know who he is, but he kind of like was responsible for like starting one of the bigger street gangs in South Central. And you know he's always defended that it was started to protect the neighborhood, and then they just kind of
Crips.
Okay, I got it right. I said Crips. I was like, I'm pretty sure it's the Crips. You really want to get that right? Like if you don't know about like street gangs, you do not want to get their affiliation wrong, even if you're not affiliated. Even I have nothing to do with street life, but it's still something I don't want to mess up on.
Yeah.
Just because I'm from the hood and I know better. I was like,
so he co-founded the Crips, but he also murdered.
Right. I was just about to get to that part. So he did murder four people. And okay. It's like, so, but they felt that he had been in jail and that he did the whole thing, and they wanted him to do a stay, like switch it over to just life in prison as opposed to him being executed. So there was a lot of protest against executing him, but he got executed. But
he ended up like turning around his beliefs and really became an advocate for anti-gang stuff.
Right.
And really talked about how remorseful he was about how about what.
So
he
they weren't even asking for him to get out. They just wanted to change it to life in prison, not for him to have a death. With him doing all these changes, but they still executed him with all this protest going
That's
on.
That's fucked up.
And so,
okay, I got it. So he was sentenced to death, but then it was reduced to a life imprisonment when the death penalty was abolished.
Okay, I didn't know that part.
But don't we still have the death penalty?
I think it was
it reinstated.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So my thing with Charles Manson, and I feel like he's just must be like on per capita, must be the most expensive fucking prisoner we have, because in my mind, the guy is, I know he's isolated. I know he's not like in a Hannibal Lecter situation, which is how I imagine him being, like very like closed off with like just like two guards watching him in a single cell.
And some holes and some glass.
Yeah. But like it does cost a lot of money to move him around. Like if he needs to go to the doctor, like it's a whole fucking operation. And they do honor his like right to see a doctor and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, Charles Manson single-handedly has cost, I mean, in a way, he's playing us still to this day. Like, he's just costing us so much money. And, like, there's a huge prison population.
I don't know. With just, like, what he represents, I on the political side, I know why he's still there. Like, I totally agree with everything you're saying, but I know politically, I know why he's still there. Like, I don't think you'll ever be able to argue for his release.
Oh, no. I mean, I think just kill him. No, I was saying he should be killed. Never get released.
Did he get the? He got the death penalty.
He got the death penalty, but it was reduced to a life in prison.
Okay.
California abolished the death penalty.
Okay.
Okay. I was confusing. I thought you were still talking about Tiffy.
Oh, no. I'm saying we should. For him. I'm saying we should kill. Just kill Charles Manson. Just like get it over.
Reinstate his death sentence.
I don't
now
know.
That's legal.
I don't know. But like it's so because I feel like to someone like him, it doesn't bother him that he's in prison.
It doesn't.
He still talks about his relationships he has. Like I remember like he was quoted recently saying that like he doesn't mind prison sex because to him, like a hole is a hole. And it's like, okay, like giving this guy attention. First of all, he somehow managed to get sicker in jail. Like he's now, because I guess he sits around and read fan mail all day. So it's just, anyway, I don't know how we got on this, but don't trust men.
Oh no!
Did you That's bring like, three reasons?
They commit 90% of all murders.
Is that true? Yeah, that sounds about right.
I was like, oh, that's...
I know there are good guys out there, so don't give us crap about it.
But that's also why female pedophiles are so sensationalized as well, is because it's so much more rare.
Well, they want to prove that women do it too, which I don't think is a
Nobody
good
wins.
Defense.
Like,
that's not a defense. I don't care who else does it. I just wanted to stop, period.
Yeah.
I was like, period. We can talk about both, but we will talk about both, and we'll talk about it. And I think the proportions where it happens.
Yeah.
You're like, well, 5% of women do it. Okay. We can talk about the 5%. Let's talk about the other 95 though.
Yeah.
Do you
want to
talk about that too? And so I feel like they're like, it's poking me. And it's like, is it really poking you? Because are you doing these things? Because if you're doing these things, then we have a whole nother conversation we need to have.
Yeah.
If you're not doing these things, I do not know why you feel attacked.
Yeah.
I don't quite understand that.
Well, I mean, I honestly, like, we've had some letters on this show that have shocked me. Like when I was like basically super vocal about being pro Hillary and like pro just like being a Democrat, lifelong Democrat, and like how I really don't like Republicans and I really don't like a lot of them. I think there can be some great conservative people, but especially now, feel like if you voted for Trump, like I don't like you, and like that's we got a letter from someone basically like talking about how, like, because I defended Planned Parenthood, for example, being like you can get cancer research. He's like, men get cancer too, and I'm like,
you can go to
but they can go.
He's like, they can go though. That's like before we get to the other part, you realize you can go to Planned Parenthood.
Men
right?
are allowed
and
to go.
They're
right?
totally able to go. So What was your next point? Because that was mute.
It was really, really like, I can't handle us
like
out.
Totally assaying like. There was no point to your point. Why are you talking? Why yeah. are you here? Are you upset about something? Let's get to that because that can't be it. I don't know. I like to reach for like ideas. I have like this imaginative sparkle pony, unicorns, like view of the world. But I'm also oddly and extremely practical. And at the end of the day, I just kind of want stuff to work.
Right.
And like people get so sucked into their ideologies.
Yeah.
Which the problem with ideology is rigid.
Yes.
Even when you have new evidence. Yes. Even when like they're like, hey, this hasn't worked. You won't change your point of view with the evidence or like realize, okay, this is not, let's try something new. Let's continue just to try stuff new. I don't care what party you're on. I'm not really obsessed. I really don't like the idea that we have a two-party system. It really doesn't work for us.
Yeah.
I don't think it will work for anybody when you just got this choice or that choice, when you really need something either in between or you just need a totally new third choice.
Right, exactly.
Or fourth choice or something like that. Maybe we need to go down the whole alphabet, you know, before we end up with what works. But we'll never get there if we're not trying new things. And the system as is isn't working.
I think there's going to be a big break coming up sooner rather than later. I don't think it's going to be within the next 8 years, but I do think it's within our lifetime. We're going to see a major turnover of some sort. There just has to be like,
well, yeah, that's why I was like, something's got to give because this isn't working and you're already on borrowed time with it. Like,
yeah.
So many things need. I was thinking about like infrastructure, and, you know, with, you know, the hurricanes and everything coming through. I was like, and they're talking about, well, a lot of the damage or problems are really coming from like projects that need to happen.
Yeah.
To like minimize the damage or reduce, you know, what's going on and stuff like that. And they're just not getting done because it's like people have such a big price tag, but then it blows through and it causes triple, quadruple that amount that you could invested.
Exactly.
And we just, our priorities just aren't, prevention is not a thing with us. And we need that like in every part of our lives, like our health.
Yeah.
You know, career, you know, planning for these like natural disasters, personal disasters
yeah.
that happen. They happen. It's like, it's important to have car insurance. Why? Because you're going to get in an accident. I don't care how long you've driven without getting into one and you're the perfect driver and you always do what you're supposed
yeah.
to do. Not everybody on the road does.
Yeah.
And it could be of no fault of your own, but you're going to get in an accident. So that's why you need insurance. That's why we need to, and then we need to make it accessible for those who don't have the ability to purchase it.
Yeah.
I'm all for like, I'd rather put in a pot and have everybody, it's cheaper when you put in a pot.
Yeah.
You put in a pot, it's cheaper for everybody. Everybody wins. What's wrong with everybody winning? And then people get in their feels and like, well, I couldn't get the help, but did you need it?
Right.
Do we get in that conversation? Did you need the help? When did you need the help? When, and if you did need it at some point and you figured your way out, wouldn't it have been nice if you had that help? How quicker could you got out of your situation if you had that help?
Yeah.
What if you fall into that situation again? That's why when it comes to like the wage increase and jobs and stuff, people are just not thinking about other people. I said, most people are just a paycheck or two away from being in that situation that they're currently
exactly.
shitting on. And so I'm like, if it happens tomorrow and your job disappears, then you're in that situation and now you've talked all this shit and you're going to let yourself sink before you ask for help because you don't want to be that person and you don't want to be a hypocrite. At least I hope you don't want to be a hypocrite.
Right.
But people are pretty bold nowadays. They'll gladly be a hypocrite when it suits them. Like, I know I was talking this bullshit stuff yesterday, but now I need a handout. Can I get that? And
yeah.
I don't feel like it's a handout to ask for help. And it also, it's a system, like whatever kind of like social safety nets we have, it's a system you pay into.
Absolutely.
It's like you pay taxes, right? You pay taxes on everything. I'm not going to be mad about going to get food stamps or whatever else they got out there when I've paid into a system. It's like paying your medical premium every month and not going to the doctor when you've had this weird, annoying, increasingly bad pain in your side. Like, why
yeah.
would you do that? You have insurance. You pay for it. Why not take advantage of it?
Well, so. The city of Albuquerque gives every resident, no matter what your pay range is, every citizen gets $200 a month in food stamps. And
mm-hmm.
I'm like, that wouldn't be a bad nationwide policy.
It really wouldn't.
Like, and I think also curbing a little bit of what you can by with mm-hmm. your food stamps too, because I have noticed like even more like I'm like, oh, you literally can at CVS, you can buy tobacco products with your food stamps. Like they will let you do that. Mm-hmm. And that's I'm like, if you just made it so that like people were like buying like fresh, nutritious food and they had this money.
Well, they have to have access
put
to it
aside,
too.
Put aside that could. Yeah, I mean, access to it.
There's food deserts even here of in course. LA where you just have to go too far to of get course. To a supermarket with fresh produce.
No, that is really it's, true, it's actually.
A real issue.
Driving through the country last year, I noticed there's a lot you can pull over in a lot of areas and they don't have, and there's nothing. There's like nothing.
Right.
So we do a thing here where we're going to take our calls next, but we do a thing here where people bring three reasons why they're qualified to give advice. Do you happen to have three reasons why you're qualified to give advice?
I felt like I went over one already, but yeah, I think I can manage three. All right.
I prompted you for this and you asked me if you could have fun with it.
I did. And I thought about it. I thought about it at the time. I wrote some stuff down. Now I'm trying to remember it. So no, you didn't hang me out here to dry. It's just like, oh, running around. I forgot to look at that piece of paper I wrote on. But okay, so my first reason is I'm in your top five, whatever that is. I'm in it. And, second reason, I'm an interdimensional sparkle pony that travels in between worlds. I mean, I feel like I got dope wisdom to spread from my travels. So
yeah.
You should get into that.
Okay. Yeah, I would love to get into that.
Get into that. And then the one I said I mentioned was this just odd perspective of that I can be very whimsical. I love getting lost in like fantasy imaginal worlds. Dressed like a cartoon. Love that I can brag about being a club kid back in the day. But I have this analytical side. I have like a science background with the art. And I don't think art and science are very different worlds. If anything, they help one another because one wants to solve problems and one wants to bring like attention to problems or even give like unique solutions. When you're a successful artist, you bring unique perspective to things. And to solve problems like a scientist, you need to have unique perspective.
Yeah.
So again, like, I'm super like floaty and like imaginary and like love ideas and stuff and like everybody get along and hug. But then I'm like really practical. And I'm like, no, bitch, that's not going to work. Like, calm down. Like, we need to do X, Y, and Z. So, yeah, kind of like your friend. They'll just tell you like the truth and then go talk about, you know, unicorns and fairies.
I'm very excited for that. And wait, so one last question before we start. You met Christina at a How to Start a Podcast thing. Do you have a podcast or are you starting one?
Yeah, I plan on starting one.
What do you want it to be about?
About LA.
Nice.
But just like the West Coast. Like, I love going up to the Bay and the West Side. I feel like a lot of podcasts, of course not this one, but a lot of podcasts often talk from the perspective like of East Coast, New York. And I was like, hey, yes, we can get out here. Like, LA's cool. We got culture. Y'all always moving here and shit.
Yeah.
She says this to the two East Coasters in the room.
I mean, you only prove my point.
It's true.
And I was like, but sometimes like people are like, you know, LA doesn't have culture. I'm like, what? Who said that? And
it's so, just a different kind from back home. We're more like historic. I mean, you guys are newer. That's just the truth. Y'all are newer.
That is the truth. And and I like to talk about weird stuff. And also, all too often, something will happen. And I'm like, I want to tell somebody about this. And I feel like I need a platform to do that.
That's
so
awesome.
That's exactly what podcasting is.
Exactly. I was like, no, come on, guys. No, it's fine.
So let's help some lost souls figure out their problems.
Let's do it.
Hey, Moles, Christina, and guests. My name's Elizabeth. I live in San Diego. I'm in my mid-20s. And it's not really a problem. It's just something that I need an outside perspective on because it's not something I think I can ask, like, my close friends about because it kind of involves them. So, pretty much, I have a pretty solid group of friends, and, like, the girls I consider my best friends I've known, like, since I was a kid, you know? And which is great. But then there's a girl who I lived with, and she's also a super close friend. We lived together for 2 years in San Diego, and she's different than all my other friends, kind of like the type of person where if we had met and under different circumstances, we probably wouldn't be friends, but we've really been there for each other through some shit and have fun together, and I love her. But she has less, I don't know, like, friends there, and she often refers to me as her best friend, or, like, I mean, you know, like, one of her best friends, but, and I guess I feel like she depends on me a lot more than I depend on her, which isn't, like, a bad thing. It just sometimes I feel a little guilty when she's just like, you're my best friend, I love you, like, I'm so glad that you're here for me. She's also going through a breakup right now, so I've been, like, extra supportive, but, like, it's not even my question, it's just, I feel kind of weird about it, because it's like I have my, like, uber, like, best friend from when I was younger, and that I'm still, like, super tight with, even though we live in different cities and stuff. And I just, is it disingenuous to call my other, like, the girl that in question, is it disingenuous to just, like, tell her, like, yeah, like, you're my best friend too? Because I consider her, like, a really close friend and a lifelong friend and stuff, but I just feel like if I were to pick, like, my ride or die, like, forever and ever, you know, like, there's people before her. And this is such a first world, like, oh, I have too many friends problem. But it's just, like, I'm curious what your take on it is. Or, like, if you have a friend that is unlike most of your other friends and just, yeah, I don't know. Like, I hope to hear your thoughts.
I'm going to just say off the top that, like, I don't think it's an issue of her not being, I don't think that you respect her that much, because, yeah, you know, hearing you do the impression of, like, no, I'm, you know, I'm sad, but I have no friends. Like, that's like me. I know that you intended to mock yourself, but you said that you've been where she is before, and then you did that impression. And I just think that that to me kind of says you might not really respect her very much. And I think the issue of whether or not she is your best friend or whether or not this is dishonest is a kind of distraction from the fact that you're organizing your thoughts in your brain. And the reality is that you just don't see this person as a lifelong friend. She's
exactly
a roommate.
I think that that is what you're really tussling with, is the fact that you don't want to be the bad guy, and you went through a time where you didn't have friends, and now you have a surplus of friends, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. And that gives you a luxury you've never had of, like, not just taking whatever comes your way. And let's just put it out on the table. Not everyone you meet, even if you guys get along, will be your best friend or a lifelong friend. They might be that occasional friend when you see them. And so she doesn't have to be your best friend. I want to say that you can have multiple best friends, but it does not sound like this is a person that you want to have a friend you value as a personal lifelong friend. So be okay with that. Accept that and live in those perimeters that you're giving yourself. Like, put her in a place that fits for you. And you don't have to tell her anything. Please don't tell her this. Don't talk to her about it. This is so much just in your head than her head.
And we've had this, like, conversation kind of come up in lots of different ways over the last few months about, like, hierarchy of best friends or what it means or whatever. And I want to, like, just remind you that best friends are not, like, a relationship. It doesn't mean you're stuck in a relationship, right, and you guys have to share that title.
Right.
It may be that you are her very best friend.
Right.
Out of all of the friends she has, you are the best one to her.
Right.
And that's what a best friend is that, like, Christina is my best friend. Like, I think I'm your best friend too. But but, like, the thing is that she's not, like, I realized
if we had, like, an oh snap moment.
No, I know.
Actually,
I know, right? Surprise. But no, I think that it's like I want to just remind everyone out there that, like, best friend is not an expression for, like, a boyfriend girlfriend relationship. Like,
right.
it's not the same thing. Or, like, a mother daughter relationship.
I totally 100% agree with you. Like, I have people who are, like, my besties, But I'm kind of sure I know that I'm not their best friend. Like they clearly have other friends that they rock much harder with.
Yes.
And be okay with that, because you're going to have your best friends and you're going to be somebody's best friend. So yeah, your friends come all across the spectrum. The spectrum does not have to be parallel for you guys to equally respect and enjoy one another. Like, I got friends that I just go out drinking occasionally with. I got karaoke friends. You have different types of friends. Like, I have friends I know I can call, you know, if I need to get into some personal shit, I need to vent. I have certain friends for that. And everybody has that. And you should never be insulted. I mean, I do understand, though, we do have a culture where sometimes, particular, maybe on your personal circle, or the class or the city or region that you're in, that sometimes people take offense to being anything less than your best friend, even when it's not appropriate. Like, I've definitely met people where I know making that announcement, like, you know, we're not cool like that, right? Would totally hurt their feelings, even though they haven't done any of the work. We don't really seem to like each other like that, but if you call them an acquaintance or anything less than just your bestie, they're totally offended. And I think we need to move away from that culture, because, again, you have all kinds of different friends and they don't have to match.
Yeah, I think it's about being honest with yourself, too. Right, is that sometimes you feel like, because you have like the warm fuzzies when you hang out with someone a few times, you're like, wow, that's like going to be a really good friend of mine. When they haven't earned that title, like you guys just had synergy the first couple times you hang out. Sometimes you go on three amazing dates with someone, and then like the fourth date you go to their apartment and you realize the way they like it's kind of sad, and like, you know, and then you realize. So, but I think also people are very quick to like throw that label on something.
Right. So true. Like, so quick. And I have been guilty of that in my younger years, because this, I think this comes with time and wisdom. You learn that just because you get quick fuzzies about someone doesn't mean you're gonna be besties forever. You might find out more about that person. While friendship is not like a relationship, you do still go through a honeymoon phase.
Yeah.
Where you're trying to be extra generous. You're trying to be extra accommodating because you're trying to see if this will become a friendship. So friendships are still relationships, but in the platonic sense. Like, that's the problem. It gets limited. Relationships get limited to just romantic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, like, the thing about new friendships that makes them so intriguing is that, like, you find another person in the world that you can, like, fuck with, and you don't have the emotional baggage that comes with, like, long-term friendships.
Right. Long-term relations or previous relationships is much breezier. Like, there's things that I'm going to...
It's so easy with you. It's like having a mistress. It's like, it's so much easier with you than it is with my wife.
Like, it is. It's like, there's a fun and a breeziness that comes along with a new friendship for sure. And like, it's... You also have those people that, like, you meet them and you immediately go really deep with them. Mm-hmm. Like, my friend Leah in Austin is like that, where it's, like, literally we've hung out, like, four times. And it took, like, contradicted what I just said. We have matching Olsen twins tattoos.
Oh,
like,
my goodness.
We, went and got, like, matching tats. Like, I, like, love this girl. And it's because, like, you know, we went really deep, like, over the course of, like, 4 days after having only met, like a little bit beforehand. However, like, there's this, like... There are certain friends. I've never been the type of person that I was good at, like, being like, okay, that's my shopping friend. That's my party friend. That's my friend that's like ride or die for everything. That's, you know, like compartmentalizing friendships used to drive me. I wasn't able to do it. You were either one in my top five or you were like out. You know what I mean? So,
and that's a personal thing. Like, your friends, what you need as a friend, and how your friends are like set up in your mind, or how you reach out to them, is a very personal experience. What works for me doesn't work for you. What I need from my friends is different from what the next person needs for them, their friends. So while I think we're definitely talking about giving advice for friendships, you need to definitely find what works for yourself and be honest about what works for you. 'Cause I think that's what you're currently struggling with, is like being honest about these feels that this girl, and you can fall in and out of like friendships with people. Like, I've definitely met people where
I was just gonna say that
we hung out hard. We had several months of like, we talk on the phone for hours, then we go to everything together, and then it faded away. And I was like, at first I had this moment of like, I wanted to be hurt about it. Cause I was like, think about what we had.
Right.
But I said, no, enjoy the moment. Like sometimes those people don't stick around and maybe it's for the best. Who knows why it came, but it was great while it lasted. And so that's why I'm always big about like living in the moment. So you don't get, you don't try to plan for tomorrow with somebody you just met.
Well, that expression, like friends are in your life for a reason, a season or a lifetime, like has been coming back to me.
That's like an old adage.
And like, it is true. Like sometimes you're like, why were you like one of my closest friends? And now I feel like so fucking betrayed by you. Like right. I've never had someone treat me that dirty. Or like, why, like, you know, like, why am I not around this person anymore? Like I fucking miss them. And sometimes you realize it's like, okay, we were meant to be friends for a season. Like you were sent into my life to teach me a lesson. Mm-hmm. And like, that was a fucking harsh lesson to learn, you know? And like, there can be you. There's lots of different reasons for friends. Not everyone can be a lifelong friend. Here's my final question for you, which I hope you understand what I'm saying when I say this, is like, what is really going on in your life? Because this is, for this to be bothering you or for this to be a problem that you would call into a podcast about, I feel like this means you're avoiding something in your life that's an actual problem, like work, or you're in a relationship that's not serving you, or you know, in general, your living situation is making you miserable, and that's low-key why you're calling. Like, I think that this is a very unconscious question. When people get wrapped up into the minutiae of like, oh, is that girl my best friend? Like, is she my, you know, do I have to tell her she's not my best friend? Like, that is an unconscious state of mind because that's not real. Like, nothing that you're saying is real. And so, and it's not something that normal people, and I don't, no one's normal, but quote unquote normal
people. I was like, I don't know what that is.
Quote unquote normal people, people who are functioning on a being present, people who are there, they don't think about stuff like this. This isn't swirling around in their mind. And when I do notice that in certain friends of mine where like they'll start babbling about something and I'm like, this is like a non thing. Like this is a non thing. Like this is. No, there's no like your feelings aren't hurt. Like this, there's no repercussions. Like you're just, it's almost like you have a desire to have a problem or have something going on in your life that distracts. And so I feel like if this is something that's plaguing you, maybe it's just a philosophical question. Maybe this is just something that you want to know. And that's why you can't bring it to your friends. Maybe I asked for calls and you felt like this was a call that you should make because you're like, oh, there's something that I could talk about. But if this is something that you really think about, if you think about this for more than an hour a week collectively, you are using this as a distraction from something in your life. Like you need to take this energy. You need to take your broken heart and turn it into art, as my cousin Liz said. You need to just take whatever this is and turn it into something else because it's wasted energy. It's like a wasted, it's wasted energy. I know I can do that when I'm like trying to avoid writing the best thing that I've ever written or, you know, whatever, or like doing the best podcast I've ever done. I know that when I'm like, but I can't do that today because I'm upset about this right now, or I'm thinking about this, or this is annoying me or plaguing me. It's a distraction that I'm creating unconsciously. You should read a book called The War of Art. It's all about how people put obstacles and create situations in their life to keep themselves from doing their best thing. Resistance is like the opposite of your natural ability. So you should just like maybe read that. Do you want to take another call? Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, yeah. We don't really have a choice.
I mean, yeah. You know, send help.
I was going to say, I blame MySpace and the top 8.
Oh, yeah.
Because that forced people to start ranking people in terms of importance.
Yeah.
And that's bled into our
culture.
I don't
know. That's like such a high school thing to do. Like, she sounds very young. And I think I can definitely remember people going on and on about who their besties were like kind of in high school. But as we become adults and our relationships with one another, and I mean, and when I say relationships, I mean any kind of human
relationship,
they get complex. And if you're still trying to force them into like this high school dynamic, you're going to be having these like thought patterns that won't be helpful to you. Like, put your friend where she needs to be. If she's not your bestie, then she's not your bestie, but you're her bestie. So if you're going to continue that relationship, be honest. Give no more than you can freely give. I think a lot of people get caught up in what they think they need to give somebody, what they feel obligated to give somebody, and then they expect certain returns, certain behaviors for that person for what they've given to that person. No, give freely so you don't have any expectations, and she shouldn't have any more expectations of what you can give of her. And be honest and just carry on from there and get out your head and live life.
Carry on, girl. All right, next call.
Hi, I called earlier. I'm leaving a shorter, more concise message because I got cut off. Sorry about that. Anyway, Molly's Christina and guest, thanks for taking this call. Really appreciate it. Long story short, I'm a new mom who recently returned to work. I work for a very well-known technical company, and I've recently been looking for a new job. Something my company does is before you formally apply for a job, you kind of have a conversation with the hiring manager and talk to them and see, hey, is this a good fit? Does it make sense? Anyway, during one of these recent conversations, I had an interesting experience I need your advice on. As a new mom, I'm blessed in that I have a lot of support nearby. I have, grandparents on both sides. Both of my husband and I, we both have siblings who are nearby and who all love the baby, obviously. And he has a ton of support and love nearby. Anyway, there was this really cool position that involved launching a new program, a new product at work. Part of the job was going to require about 20% of travel. It's not something that I love, honestly, to be away from my baby, but I knew he would be okay. And this opportunity was so cool that I thought it would be an interesting trade-off. It was only going to be a year's worth of travel, and then you would be kind of settled in the city we're based in. Anyway, in my conversation with the hiring manager, within the first 15 minutes, he told me it wasn't a good idea that I pursue the job because I am a new mother, and as someone who had also had a family, he didn't think it would be the right move for a young mom to be away from her kid that much. And I was shocked. At the time, I just kind of responded, my kid has a lot of support. I think it would be fine. And, it's not a hurdle for me in taking this role, but I'm kind of mad at myself looking back that I wasn't sort of more stingy, aggressive in my feminism, because I consider myself a really strong feminist, is to say like, hey, this is really inappropriate that you're asking me that. I can make my own decisions and I don't need you telling me sort of what to do. So, anyway, as someone I admire as a feminist, I'm hoping you can give me some advice on sort of like the balance between defending your beliefs and also like walking the line of professionalism and not compromising a job opportunity. At the same time, do I really want to work for someone like that? So anyway, I'm kind of doubting myself. I've had a few glasses of wine. I'd love your opinion. Thanks so much. All right. Love you. Bye.
Well, this might leave you very mad at me. I honestly don't disagree with him. I don't think that he brought it. I don't think it was appropriate for him to bring it up because of just simply HR issues and the fact that it's not his job to put his personal opinion. But if you're calling me and asking me for my opinion, I don't think that a mom should be leaving her newborn baby. I think that that time that you is so important, and an aunt or an uncle or a relative, hugging that baby and putting them to sleep and spending time with them is not going to make up for you not being there during the first year or, couple years of your child's life. It would only be a year of frequent travel, but that's a very, very, very important bonding time in your child's life. And as you guys have heard me say on this show before, my biggest concern when anyone ever calls about any situation with kids is the kid. Always. I champion turning out the best possible kids you can. And for mothers, I mean, I just feel like I need to protect them. I understand that this is a gigantic issue when in terms of feminism. For me, I don't think that this, for me, I actually, I don't think it's a feminist issue. I think this is an issue of, and yes, him bringing it up to you in a work setting, would he bring it up to a new father? I don't know. But he said as a new father himself, he regretted it. So that's what I want to throw out there to you. He didn't say this to you necessarily because he was a woman. It was because you had a new baby, because he himself regretted that time away from his new baby. So I think that you're hinging a little bit too much on you know, feminism. And I understand that also this is a time in our climate where it's more important for you to be outspoken than ever regarding stuff like this. I just personally, I wouldn't walk away from my kid no matter how much support I had around. Like, I think that, you know, I understand work. If you have to work, you have to work. Like, you know, a lot of families need a dual income, or, you know, they can't maintain their lifestyle that means a lot to them. That's understandable. I actually agree with him, and I don't think it was appropriate, but I also don't think it's a feminist issue either. I think that if you were to ask Jezebel, they would probably say it is, but I think that it sounds like this guy said that he himself as a father regretted the choice to take that travel job. So that's my opinion.
That's interesting, because when I heard this call, I heard her first call where she did not say the thing about the guy being a new dad. And it made me irate, because I was like, A, you should go to HR, and if HR is not going to do anything about it, B, go to the EEOC, the Equal Opportunity.
Right.
I think file something, because that's discrimination. He probably wouldn't bring that up to a new dad.
Right. And I really, there's different things.
But that
things
was the first being, call you heard.
Right. Yeah, yeah, right.
And I heard this call too, but it's also just like, that's a concern that she has to assess on her
right,
own.
Right. Because the context,
that's not something that he has to bring up.
We weren't in the room. I mean, there's the tone, there's the context. Mm-hmm. How well do you know this person? There's questions to be asked, whether this is a friendly, like, hey, I knew situation, because I definitely know what it's like to talk to people that know me personally and then go and be interviewed by them for a job. Yeah. And as much as we're supposed to put that aside, we're humans at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And maybe he was coming at you as a friend. But again, I don't know how close this person is. And for him to already know you have a child, I'm pretty sure that wouldn't come up in an interview, in my opinion, with a stranger.
Now,
with somebody who doesn't know you. So context is everything.
100%.
Yeah. So I don't want to make any assumptions, because I was like, but it definitely comes down to how you feel it was given to you, because he could have every intention. We all know about intention and impact. And if he delivered this, even if you guys were friends and he came off as this condescending, like, well, you know, you just had a kid and all, you know, you should be a better woman and like, just, you know, take care of your kid. If he delivered it like that, then no, you need to go talk to HR and stuff. But ultimately, I had a very idyllic childhood, and my mom was very much there, but my dad had to make up that difference. And what he did is, he worked several jobs to have my mom at home, because childcare was just so expensive. And then when I got a little bit older, me and my siblings became latchkey kids, because we needed that second income despite the fact. So once we got just old enough, I'm not going to say what age, just old enough where we could walk home from school and like open up the back door and go into our house, my mom started to be a teacher's assistant. So understanding, like, having her there, but my dad also made time too, and he was tired. So if you're willing to commit to both the lifestyle that you have to live, and that means if you're going to take the step up, because I always encourage people to build for the future. So this career move might put you in a place where you then, year two, you have more time, and you will continuously have more time, because you made this career choice that will provide the luxury of you being always there into the future. because I definitely know what it's like. Like, you make that one decision, it gives you that kind of career. Now you have free time from 2 until he's out the door for college.
Yes.
Because you made this career choice that's going to give you the comfort and the ability to be home more often for the future. So if it's that kind of job move, you're kind of investing your child. But in that year, it is precious. It is important. So you come home late. I know that's what my dad would do. He'd come in our room and like say, hey, give you a kiss. And you know, if it wasn't too late, you know, he might talk to us.
Yeah, so, my dad would like read a nighttime story. Right. Like, that was like, you know, our time with him.
Exactly. Is that, like, so you make that time and you invest in the future for their child. So I do not want to deprive you of a self-fulfilling move, something that might give you better access and more time and luxury for you and your family, particularly your child. But no, it will be a grind if you make that decision, because you still kind of need to be there and spend time and bond.
And you won't get it back. Want, if you, when you you're home and you don't want to be there, like, that's also another, that's a statement about whether or not you should have children. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's too late now, but if you get home from a long day and you don't want to be with your kid even during that time, but this is something that I have to say, that's like, it's been like, I'm like, I've been burning up inside for the last 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. If you were denied the job opportunity total, if he said, I'm not going to offer you this job because of it, then I really do think that that's an HR issue. I think this is whatever. Mm-hmm. I think, though, when someone is sitting across from you and trying to level with you, and he himself identified as a new dad, mm-hmm. and said, like, I'm just going to be real with you, this was a huge mistake for me to take this job because I was away from my kid the first year. Mm-hmm. That's really not, that's like someone being honest with you. And that's someone giving you an opportunity that's someone giving you an opportunity. If I think if he identified himself as a new dad, I think he would have said this to a guy, too. Mm-hmm. And I really do think that this is, it's only if you were denied the job because you were a new mom that I think that you would have, he's allowed to say to you, hey, just so you know, like, when I took this job, I wound up regretting it. Again, that comes
back into the context the message was delivered, because you're trying, maybe he was just trying to let her know how difficult this job was going to be with her having a child at home that she probably very much wants to be with. And if that was the case, then it comes down to how that makes you feel. I mean, I can't tell her how to feel about it, but I would consider the fact, was that delivered into me just to give me, like, how real this position is going to be. Maybe the traveling might be more than just, you know, 20%. But in the end, the choice should be yours. You shouldn't be denied the opportunity to take that obligation. And I think all parties here just want you to know that it will be difficult. And you have to still make yourself available, which I don't think that was ever a question, if you wanted to be with your child or you're not going to try to be available for your child. But if you can do it, it's important. I don't know all the other circumstances around it. I'm all about you having that ultimate choice and you know what's best going to work for your family. But yeah, so
I context. Will also say that I do, this is another belief that our caller may not like me for, and like, I apologize, because I can tell that you wanted me to give you the you go girl, like, get your fucking ass down to HR and you get that man fired. I know you wanted me to say that to you because you're having these revenge fantasies in your head where you're going and telling this guy off for what he said to you. But I really would ask, and I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and say that you are intelligent enough that you would not be doing this. I think that there is an unfortunate thing where people can sometimes cry like discrimination as a woman. I think that there are certain instances where it muddies the water of feminism. And this is like where if you take this to HR, and this really was just you, like the guy explaining the job to you and saying like, look, I'm, you know, if it was tone, if there was context, if it was, and I really want you to ask yourself, was this him just saying, do you think that he's talking to everyone about the lifestyle change that this travel will bring? Do you think that he, with every person he's interviewing, he's asking them to consider everything that it is about this job? I think that going and crying, like, you know, lack of feminism or lack of equality or discrimination or whatever else, that really like takes away from the people that are going to actually face that in your workplace, or like the assistant that's being sexually harassed. Like, if these claims of discrimination start coming in, and some are just, you're angry because you heard something you didn't want to hear, mm-hmm. Which is that, like, you know, possibly this dream job there are parameters to it that you hadn't considered or something, and he wants to make sure you're considering. I don't think that that's I don't think that that's worthy of reporting the man.
I also feel like that what you're saying can better be brought into focus about the second part of your question about professionally kind of questioning this line of speech from this potential employer. And that is something that I often have to do as somebody who is kind of like doing more professional stuff. I definitely work with colleges and organizations, and they ask you to be professional, but I'm also like this pop culture, you know, club kid type of person, like online. So definitely like being woke and being conscious, and definitely I've done it. I've definitely called people out at work in professional settings. I've definitely done it. But when I say call out, we have to be intelligent. We have to be careful. We have to be tactful about it, because even if you're 100% right, and the context was such that it was what you're saying it was, you still got to walk that line. You still want the job. And I definitely feel that way. Sometimes I know, like, my name is actually Marquita. For those who, like, don't think my name is Marquita, it's Marquita. And, like, I know that there's probably applications I've been passed on because my name is Marquita. So I do come to that same conclusion. Like, did I want to work for somebody who would, my name alone would stop them from hiring me? No, not really. But I do acknowledge that I have the privilege of being somebody from, like, having the income level that I have. That, granted, I have worked for. I definitely worked for. No, like, it's earned. But there's definitely some things that probably have happened in my life that allowed me to be in a place where I say, hey, you know what? I'm cool. I'm cool on you right now. So that's one thing. But yes, I think you could have asked him to clarify, you know, where he was coming with that, you know, would he, is he concerned you won't be able to do the job? You know, you can return it back to the job so you can remain professional. There is to your point, Molly, you know, we get emotional. And if we see there's an issue, what I usually do is I clamp down on my feelings because I get it's like a flare up inside. Mm-hmm. And what I tend to do is automatically clamp down on that flare. And I try to be highly analytical and very like scientific with these questions. So what I do is, your questions should make no assumptions when you're professionally trying to ask somebody about something. You allow them to tell you without a doubt where they're coming from. And I do this on social media, which is always a hoot because most people are extremely emotional on the Twitters and stuff like that. And you can usually derail a troll or somebody real quick if you hold off getting emotional, because that's what they're expecting from you. And you just think this through and say, well, I'm not going to make any assumptions. I hear some language that makes me think a certain thing. So here's some questions so you can clarify, so I can really know where you're coming from. So you could have just asked him in a professional tone, well, are you concerned that I will not be able to perform the job? Or is this coming from a place where you're a friend and you're thinking I'm really going to miss out? And if that's the case and you feel comfortable, maybe you can discuss with him what you plan to do to make sure that you don't regret this choice.
Yeah.
And reiterate that you have thought this through. Mm-hmm. You have a plan of action. So you will not miss this important first year with your child. I'm sure that is never going to be in your intention. And you've thought about it long and hard. That's why you're going for this job. And it might lead into, again, we've said before, into the future. So just go back and clarify, like, and so I definitely have had chances where I missed my opportunity, like, to go in there and smash because for whatever reason, a lot of times what happens to me is I've been stunned and I've dealt with discrimination
in the moment,
In the moment on every level, from, like, you know, it's racial, it's my gender, it's my orientation. It's I'm feeling myself and I love myself and somebody's mad about that.
Yeah.
You know, so I, like, people get on you. So you being happy can be an issue for somebody. And so it's sometimes it stuns you because you never expect it to come from where it does. So don't feel bad about that. But I think experience is the key. If it's happened to you before, then you can be prepared next time and actually give it some thought. Think about what you would have said. what are those professional questions that you would have asked, you know, and this is also a good way of working out a system. That's what I like to do. Work out my system by going over the hypothetical of what I would have said had I been more posed, had I been more ready for this question. And then not only are you prepared should it happen again, but you kind of worked it out of your system and kind of, you know, I definitely like you feel bad and you want to work out that anger. And so I think it's therapeutic while also creating a solution for the next time should it happen. And unfortunately, as women, this there's a high chance it might occur again.
Yeah.
So you're without regret now. But, yeah. But it happens.
And I do want to just say that. Like, I think that you were probably smart enough to know the difference between when you're being discriminated and when you're not. But mm-hmm. based on the call that you gave me and the facts that you gave me, I don't see discrimination there. Mm-hmm. And that's just my opinion. I know, like, whatever. Like, just call us back with an update and let us know what you think based on everything we just said. If you feel that it was a true instance of discrimination, now that you've maybe hopefully taken into thought what I've said, what you have said, what mm-hmm. Christina has said, taken all those things, do you think that this was a malicious act? Do you think that this is something that is actionable? Mm-hmm. Do you think that you've been denied the opportunity? These are all things that I would love to hear back from you on as soon as possible, actually.
This is a complex and interesting question, and it's hard to talk about without like being in the room, you know. It does prove difficult.
But I mean, technically you just asked three people and you got three different answers.
Right. Right. Like, yeah. I was like, yeah, it's just very different.
Because we don't know his context. Again, yeah. Like, we don't know his tone. Yeah. And tone is everything. Yeah. I think the way it came up is everything. Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna stick to the fact that he bringing up that he himself was a new father and he regretted it. I think that this actually is a guy that sounds like an involved parent, and mm-hmm. I applaud that. And I actually, I do applaud.
I would hope so. I feel like that might be an assumption. Like me, I had that thought when he said that, and I said, well, it lasted for a year. What work did you put in when he was two? Or his child was two. So I do have some things.
I would bet a lot.
Yeah, I would hope it. So. I would hope so, because I feel like while year one is important, I don't want to get in that slippery slope. Well, I didn't do it this part, so I can't catch up. I feel like children are very forgiving. I was very forgiving with my parents, but they were very honest with me too. Mm-hmm. Like when my father lost my job, we had a talk about it and how changes were going to happen in the house and stuff like
that.
That
happened with me too.
Right, where it's like, okay, you know, we can't do this. This is what's going to happen. I have to go to work. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome how
I paid for my last year of college because right. I was working and my right. dad wasn't.
I at one time in college, I had three jobs because I had to make it happen because home was in turmoil. But that starts at a young age where you're honest with your kids. Like, because I was like, nothing, like now my parents are like pretty, like not to totally change the subject, but it's kind of related because my parents are like elderly now. And sometimes they do act like that 10 year old that doesn't kind of understand like plans change.
Right.
And that sometimes that 10 year old doesn't understand that stuff happens because nobody has bothered to explain to them that stuff happens.
Yes. And this is, I also want to throw out my perspective too, because you got three different answers from three different people who grew up in three different ways. I was from a single mom, and to this day, I know that, like, I've said this to her before, so I know if she's listening, I hope this doesn't hurt you. But I will say that, like, I've always considered my grandparents to be my real parents because my mom worked all the time and I was with them most of the time. And most of my best childhood memories are with them. And I feel like they were the ones that were unconditional support for me. And that is what, you know, I think that parents, especially a stressed out single mom, there's always going to be a conditional attitude. The last thing I would want for you to do is to come home exhausted, and the time that you spend with your child, you don't have light in your eyes for them. Like, you don't have energy for them. You're annoyed because you're fucking exhausted. Like, that is how you make a child feel unwanted. And like, that is just something that I would like you to know is my struggle. So that's, and it would have been, you know, I don't know if it would have been different if I had a dad around or what? Because I did technically have two parents around. I had wonderful aunts and uncles who were always there for me. But being in childcare and being separated from my mom and even being with family members when she was working was it's definitely had a huge effect on my life and my relationship with her well into my 30s. That's just something to consider, like when you consider my point as well. And I hope that doesn't negate that I also just in general think that like you should do the best you can to be home. I know I don't want to have kids until I'm in a position. If I ever have a child, I usually say I don't want a child. Mm-hmm. And it's because I don't want to fuck one up. And I really don't want to – I don't want to do that until I can be in the position to take that first, like, couple years of their life and be with them. And, you know, as a writer, I can always write at home and there's, you know – but I do expect, like – you know, I'm not going to have a child unless I have a partner that I know is going to be there for the long haul. I'm not going to I'm not going to have a child unless I'm in a financial position where either I have money saved or where, you know, my partner makes enough money that they can support that lifestyle. But I do. I mean, for me, ideally, I would be home with a child for the first 2 years of its life. So that's also who the person you're asking, which is something I always like to remind someone when they call, please advise. I'm not here to like impose anything on you, but you are asking me. I'm not a doctor. I don't come from I come from a place of bias. So that is just something to consider as well. Like, whatever. We all grew up very different. So I think that's also why we gave three different answers too.
That's true too.
You know?
My most important thing is that it just doesn't continue. Like, if you take the job and you're away from home, no, if you do it for the first 10 years of their life, yeah, they're not so forgiving.
Yeah.
First year, I think you might get by, and year two should be awesome and lots of mommy son time, and you should be cool. But yeah, as long as it doesn't continue.
Yeah. Okay, call us back, please, because we need more information. We need more deets for sure. Like, just call us back as soon as you listen to this and let us know some of those answers to those questions. I would love to continue to track this call and the situation over the first year of your kid's life. I think that this is something that we should talk about as a mom getting back into work and facing these sort of things, because it's definitely a hot button issue. Oh, one more question is, how was your employer about your maternity leave? How is your employer leading up to your pregnancy? Do you think that in general there is a discrimination towards mothers in your workplace? These are things that I would like to know, because that also colors a lot of things. And do you think your coworker that said this to you, that was in a position to give you this job, do you think that he is a particularly involved father? Those are all things that I would like to know.
Also, would we be having this conversation if it was the dad?
I mean, I would be.
I would hope so.
But
I just feel like every time this conversation gets like really lit like this, it's like a mom saying, hey, I want to go back to work and I want to do my thing. But, you know, if the father's out the house, no working and grinding, you know, there were times I missed my dad. He's working really late.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that same thing. But there's like no real expectation. And you have to be like an awesome dad to say, I need to be home for my kids when I can. And my dad did do that. But I know plenty of people whose parents didn't do that. Like, their dads didn't do that. And they're like, because I'm grinding, I'm working, I'm making this bread. And nobody really questions that.
Well, that's why so many workplaces are giving paternity leave, right, and it's also important. Opening up the door to the fact that there's a lot of couples that have kids are not a man and a woman, and it's not a biological child. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, they both need time to bond with the kid. Mm-hmm. Or there needs to be like a way of figuring out, because there's no like mom that's like breastfeeding all the time, or a dad mm-hmm. that's like out earning, you know, bringing home the bacon. Like, the traditional family is changing a lot, and that's why mm-hmm. I always bring it back to the kid, because politics, family politics aside, like, what's the best thing for the kid? Because that's who is the person who's in the most danger here, you know? All right, let's take another call.
Hi, Malls, Christina, and guest. My name is Abby. I am a longtime listener and longtime Malls fan from back in the Malls She Wrote days. I am 26. I live in a fairly large city. I don't really think I have necessarily a question, but more of something that I kind of just want to hear discussed on the podcast, if that's okay. and a story to tell you, of course. So I've had a few long-term relationships in my life. They've all gone okay, and, you know, didn't work out in the end. We were incompatible for various reasons, and something I've kind of noticed is a lot of times with these guys, I'm not really interested in them initially, but then that affection grows, but when it ends, I kind of look back and can kind of see why we were maybe incompatible and how I may have seen that from the beginning. So, you know, this time around, I got out of a long-term relationship and I told myself that I was going to hold out for a guy who really wowed me, who, you know, made me want to double text. That's what I told myself. And I met that guy. We are family friends, our parents know each other, and we've kind of been hanging out for the last few months. We would see each other maybe once a week, go mountain biking or go out to drinks, and we made out a few times. And these last 2 weeks I've been traveling, and I came home and I texted him. We don't really text conversationally, so we haven't really been keeping up or anything, but I started a conversation with him and I never heard back from him, so I was kind of taking that as a hint and it was making me sour. So, but tonight I found out that his parents invited my parents over for dinner at their place, and he was there and he brought his girlfriend. which is kind of funny and weird. So, I don't know. I think right now I feel like I'm just dealing with an overwhelming sense of rejection, and I just have this fear that a guy I'm attracted to, I'm never going to be good enough for, and I'm just going to be settling for mediocre men forever. And I know that's dramatic and silly, and, you know, this guy was nothing special. If he's, you know, either being sketchy with me about having a girlfriend, or if, you know, I got second place, either way, fuck him. But I'm just so bummed that I was vulnerable, and I thought it was worth it. I was a total schoolgirl. I was just oogly eyes, and I really feel like if it's worse than when I broke up with my last boyfriend of, you know, 1.5 years, because we just didn't get along anymore. Like, I think this feels worse, even though it's not anything serious. So I just wanted to talk about it and maybe hear you guys discuss rejection on the podcast and kind of just how to deal. I'm feeling it, but thank you so much for everything. I'm again a huge fan, big time listener. Thank you so much, Moles.
Abby, okay, so the situation is that she was dating a family friend, and just briefly, and for some reason his rejection has hurt more than the last several relationships she's been in, which even though it hurt while she was going through them, she now sees that maybe those weren't the best relationships, but it still hurts to be rejected, right? Yeah. That's the gist?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, because that was a lot, and like I have to say, I but thank you for the support over the years. Listen, so I have to tell you that, like, first of all, like, hooking up with a family friend is like my
always
that is
dangerous.
First
always
of all,
dangerous.
Never. I don't want my parents to know that I fucked their friend's son. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want, and I'm not saying that that's what you did, but ew. Like, what? Like, I love the, like, I hinge everything on the fact that, like, you know, my mom has no technical proof I'm not a virgin. Like, and that is, my life hinges upon that fact. Like, yes, like, boyfriends have come and stayed that, that she's met before, but, there's no technical proof. Honestly, just the idea of, like, Sue and Ted or whoever your mom's friends are, like, knowing that you boned down with their son that when you've known each other since y'all were children is disgusting to me. So
I feel the same way.
Okay. I am the minority in the room. I am totally down for buddy love. So I think sometimes that's been like the best sex of my life.
Oh, and shit.
I'm not shitting on you for that one. Definitely not. Why I said that there's danger there is, you know, because it's like dating in your backyard. Like, yes. If things go bad.
I don't fucking do that, dude. I don't do that.
If things go badly in your backyard, and I mean, it really depends.
And I've shat where I ate, like, in terms of, like, I've hooked up with someone at work before. Right, like, you know, but.
And so there's always a danger of dating someone who's already in your life. You're going to see them regardless. And, yeah, so that part, I'm like, that's why I don't do it. I tell my friends not to do it. Because I was like, I hate when, like, I have a group of friends, and it's definitely happened multiple times. Because you can never tell your friend not to date somebody in the group. And it splinters the group.
Yeah,
because now they don't want to have anything to do with that person. Uh-huh. Because this happens. And so I just, yeah, so I'm not tripping over that part, but I think hurt and rejection go together. I'm not surprised. And if you call when that was fresh, I kind of get your call, because rejection of any kind, especially the way it first fell out, I was like, man, that dude is a douchebag. Like, who does that?
So, I almost wonder if she misread some signals.
Right, right. I was like, there should have been some, like, red, like, flaming flags for somebody to do some, like, fuckery like that. So I was like, okay, did you see all of them? See all the flags? And sometimes we do ignore the flags because we like the person and stuff like that. I'm guilty of that.
Or not even flags. You just don't look into this. Like, you're not, like, you're overestimating what the situation is.
And again, like, this even works into, like, the earlier conversation we're having with friends. This also goes with relationships. That whole, like, we get each other. Like, you guys were, like, lifetime friends. You're going to get each other. And so it's like you might get involved with each other a lot quicker. Things get heavier quicker because you already know each other's ins and outs. You got the cheat codes, pretty much. You got the cheat codes. It's a video game. You got all the cheat codes.
A-B,
right? up down round kick. And you get into each other much quicker than you would if that was a stranger. And I think maybe that's why the rejection was hitting you so hard. But I still agree with you, dude's a monster, because if you've got a girlfriend, then why the hell are you talking to me? So, and I'm not a psychic. Obviously, you were keeping down the low. And I don't know. I don't really care about his parents, because they knew about her and they probably knew you guys were messing around. So I'm not cool with the parents either. Everybody can, like, eat a dick at this point.
To what extent were they messing around, though? Yeah, is that, I mean, I'm thinking that maybe, like, he just thought he was talking to a family friend.
That,
and, like,
could have been
there
it.
Is an implied intimacy, because I'm assuming that they kind of grew up together. They've seen each other around growing up. So then you get really comfortable together, almost like a cousin.
Right.
So you don't know. Maybe he was looking at you like a cousin when you guys were having these conversations.
Okay.
And you were this as maybe more of a romantic thing. So to when the obvious situation shows up.
That's such a good question. Like, was it mutual? And are you positive it was mutual?
Right.
Okay, like, that's a really good question.
Or something like that?
I mean, yeah.
Like, made up.
Okay, like, if we missed some part, like, I'm going to apologize. Like, because I felt like I can't remember if being, because the thing I like about the hikes and stuff like that doesn't necessarily have to be romantic. And if it wasn't on his part, then he's not the monster. But if you guys did anything sexual, then it's like you were leading on. So we're not 100% sure on whether he was leading you on, or maybe you misinterpreted some of the things he was doing because you were friends.
Yeah.
And that's always, again, messing around with your friends. Like, if you're gonna mess with, as somebody who's done buddy love, who supports the buddy love, I'm always extreme. Well, this is how I am in all sexual relationships. I'm always very clear about my intentions, what I would like, and if things are slipping. But usually, mine's has never been that fuzzy. It's like, yeah, you put your hand in a certain place, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, or no, I don't want to do that with you. I definitely have friends I've been interested, and I'm like, nah, I'm not. It's not happening for me. But if that's the case, but I always say get clearance on like what you're doing, where you're going with it. If you were thinking like, I want a future with you or something like that, then probably just let them know. If it scares them off, let them go. Never hold on to anybody. Never be scared.
I say drop this shit so fast. Never look back. Don't say a goddamn word.
Well, on this, but I'm thinking like the future, okay, like, because she's like talking about just how to deal with rejection and move on. But I also think like a lot of honesty might have helped this not blow up so badly. Right. And so I was like, so that's the part we're working with where we don't know all the deets, as Molly would say. And I just want to be perfectly clear. Like, we can address both situations. Like,
right,
he's a total dick if he was leading you on. And if he wasn't, then this is a time of you having to reevaluate. Like, because I think most people have been there. They don't want to be alone. You know, you start to get older, you want a partner. You might not be that older. You just want a partner. That's totally natural. But be realistic about it and be patient about it. And don't stop wanting to love. Like,
true,
falling in love is a scary, vulnerable place. If you go from that attitude of I don't want to be hurt anymore, I'm not gonna ever try again, then guess what, you're gonna be alone with a lot of cats.
Yeah.
It's just gonna
that's
be
real
a,
it's gonna that's be a real and like look like and just in terms of like, you know, I wish we can talk about heartbreak or rejection or whatever else, but like honestly, I'm not going to lie. Like when I'm going through a bad breakup, I absolutely Google like, how do you get over a breakup? Like, I'm one of those people. Like, I do not know. There's no answer to it. Like, you just have to go through it.
And again, it's different for everybody. What will help and stuff like that. But I think you also prove something to yourself, like running again, which strengthens the whole, like being honest and just like looking in the face and facing it. Like, you ran away from details,
yeah,
that helped you in the later on, because you're running from this idea. So that also makes me kind of question like, how honest were you being with yourself,
right,
about what was happening? So, you know, sometimes we fall for a monster, and other times everything was in plain sight. I heard a beautiful story about how someone, their first girl crush, was on somebody who was married, and they didn't realize they were married until they got invited over to their house. And then when they got introduced to the spouse, they were like, what? And then they went back, and it's almost like, you know, that flashback you have in a movie of seeing the ring. Every single time. Like, it wasn't like they weren't wearing the ring.
Yeah.
They were just so smitten by that person.
They were blinded.
They were just ignoring the fact that there was this ring on this woman's finger, like, every day at work. And, like, all this intimate moments they were having at lunch was completely in their head.
Yeah.
Like, completely in their head.
And I can imagine that can be confusing, too, because women are just naturally more affectionate. Like, I can imagine navigating the waters, like, as a bisexual person or a lesbian, like, in particular, women are so fucking touchy and flirty and, like, so... And they don't even realize it. And it's like, is this person...
It hurts so bad.
And I mean, I will say I'm one of those people that like hugs, like when people hug me, I'm like, like I get really uncomfortable. So I'm like, thankfully, I'm like, I think I don't do that to people. Mm-hmm. But I do know that is like, I can't imagine how difficult that is. Like, it's like,
and again, like even though this is a guy, he's your childhood friend.
Yeah.
So he's going to be more comfortable, more huggy, more everything with you. And if you're, I don't know how fresh the last breakup was, but know that rebound mentality is real.
Yeah.
And so if you were pretty fresh off of a breakup and here comes your best friend from way back and he's hugging you and supporting you and doing this, you might have allowed yourself to think
right
that, you know, this was more than what it really was.
Gave yourself a little leash.
Exactly. So we were trying to determine whether he was leading you astray or you were leading yourself astray, because hikes, while they can be romantic, are pretty platonic most times.
Like, literally, like, I can't think of anything less romantic than a hike.
Some people are into it. I'm not. Oh, maybe you're outdoorsy.
Those are the sporty people who
are
like,
exactly.
Oh, I love to work out. Let's go. I've dated
quite a few.
And it's like almost a cliche to be like,
somebody who dates women like lesbians, that's a thing. That's totally a thing.
Sew on our boots and go for a hike. Right, yeah, like, no thanks.
I'm like, I'm not that type of gay.
Maybe for that reason alone, that's why I've never really dated girls. Okay, so let's take our, I think we're done with calls, right? I mean, I just can't do physical activity. I think we're done with our calls, but I want to thank you so much for being here. You were an amazing guest. Christina,
I enjoyed it so much.
Thank you for, I mean, this is, I think, our first like guest that you've booked.
Yes.
And like, let's get some more of that, please. Where can people find you online? Where, like, look, like, because eventually when your podcast comes out, I want people to be able to find it. What's your Twitter? Where's your Instagram?
Well, thankfully, I've made that easier. All my social media is pretty much at lastar.next.
Okay.
So it's like lastar.next. And you can find me on the Twitters and the Facebooks and the Gram and Snapchat and all that wonderful stuff. And maybe I can come back and we can like talk about
absolutely
the new podcast or
absolutely
something like that. I don't know.
I would love for you to come back.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I always enjoy to do that. But yeah, I'm always there. Hit me up. Say hey. Like, just don't come for me, bro. Unless you're ready. Unless you're ready. Yeah, unless you're
ready. Don't come for her, you guys. Don't come for her unless she sends for you.
Because I run these internet streets.
I understand that. Okay, you guys, thank you so much. I will talk to you next week. Always call 323-450-7408. And remember, I am going to New York in a couple weeks, and I'm going to bang a bunch of episodes. So not even a couple. I'm going to New York next week. And I need you guys to call and leave a shit ton of calls, because I'm going to try and record like 6 shows in a day. So, yeah. All right. Bye.